Hey, John.
Hey, Alex.
Do you know what you lost?
What did I lose?
That loving feeling. Whoa. That loving feeling.
I'm sorry. Should we go to counseling about it?
Well, you know what? I appreciate that apology. You can be a wingman anytime.
I wasn't aware. I apologize.
Yeah. We unfortunately watched Top Gun. More like bottom knife, am I right?
Yeah. What?
Because I want to take a knife up my ass instead of watch this movie again.
Oh, not a fan, huh?
I'm going to go behind the scenes here. A little break in kayfabe, which I rarely do. Some of my opinions are a little inflated for the show to allow for entertainment. And I had a whole tact that I was going to come with on this episode, wherein I even said, like, we've done Tom Cruise before. We didn't really talk about how he's a believer in a garbage religion that abuses people and, you know, he's a soulless reptile in this movie. But the movie fucking rocks. Yeah, boys rule kind of thing. I just can't because this movie doesn't rock. This movie does not make me think boys rule. It's bad. It's like real bad. But I will say this. That soundtrack fucking bops.
Yes, absolutely.
Thus ends my only compliment.
I'm not as strongly opinioned about it as you are. I don't love it, but I appreciate its bit in American history and its place in 80s filmmaking. And basically the action stuff is kind of cool, but the parts where it's not that are less good.
Even the action stuff, which is what I was hoping would be good, didn't. I mean, there's hunky guys without their shirts, like essentially fucking. And I still didn't find it amusing. And you've listened to me on the show. You've had to.
Yeah.
And this is right up my street. That volleyball scene should be, I should be objectifying all of those men all over the place. But like, I hate Maverick so much as a person like that. Let's try to like have some kind of semblance of order. But I think I actually might like Joaquin Phoenix's the Joker as a person more than I like Maverick.
Well, sure. I mean, because he's less of a
rapist, like a garbage human, like someone that takes bets on betting people. Oh God, fucking! What a gross way to be introduced to a character.
Yeah, it's interesting. Also, the shifting sands of masculinity that you see. Like, this is in the 80s. What being a man was, you know, like, oh yeah, he's the ideal, and now it's bragging about how you're sad all the time. Like it's just different in what we're looking in for in a leading man.
Because
this is sort of this guy is all over the place in 80s movies.
I have empathy towards it being the 80s because I don't think Tom Cruise is like this at all, which I think hurts this a lot, is that he's the wrong guy for this role, except for some of the piloting stuff I kind of get, but like him and Kelly McGillis, it's anti-charisma.
Oh yeah, no, it's
they had like a Basquiat on the wall behind them one time, and they started talking, and it just turned into Whistler's mother. Like it just all of a sudden all the joy of anything happened just starts getting turned down, and then it became black and white. It just slowly fell off the wall.
Yes, was Thomas Kincaid's favorite movie. You can't say the problem is Kelly McGillis. Eventually, like in the last 10 years, came out as a lesbian because she's great. Yeah, she's great in Witness and whatever. The problem is that you put Tom Cruise up against a human female, and so often that just does not work.
Oh, it's 100%.
And I'm not making any. Yeah. And I'm not making any statements about his sexuality or anything. I'm just saying him interacting with human females generally, there's not a zazz there.
No, he is not a sensual man on screen.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm going for.
And I mean,
that's not what he's into.
You know, there's hints that he's gay or whatever, and that's not where I was going with that at all. Actually, I didn't know Kelly McGillis ended up being gay later. Even if him and Val Kilmer had a passionate kissing scene, which would have made this movie a million times better, I still wouldn't buy it from Tom Cruise's perspective. He's just not a sexual guy. Like, them kissing, it just felt like, you know those memes of Mark Zuckerberg where he's like, oh, I don't know how humans, I mean, I don't know what I want for breakfast. Like, Tom Cruise is that same vibe of just like, at some point, he's going to reveal himself that he's at least 1/4 lizard.
It's like when we watched Nightbreed, we complained about all the kissing in that movie. And like, just it's gross and weird, but it's like, he's the antithesis of that.
Yeah.
He's just like, no kisses, please. Good luck in the next fiscal quarter. He's that kind of guy.
And just to get the main gripes of this movie out of the way before we really start, I would just like to quote from the IMDb trivia page. Riding on the back of this film's success, the U.S. Navy set up recruiting booths in the major cinemas to try and catch some of the adrenaline-charged guys leaving the screenings. They had the highest application rate for years as a result. So, John,
yep.
This movie, one, killed a pilot on set,
mm-hmm.
but then two, killed many young men. Because the deaths were responsible because of this movie. People joined the Navy, and some of them just by math had to have died. So this piece of shit movie killed young men, and I'm not going to forgive it.
And then all the young men that tried to copy it, trying to get multiple G's in their backyard and failed and died.
John, what do you
yes.
tell me about Top Gun. I've already talked too much.
Well, Top Gun is a movie in the 80s. Tony Scott, which, God bless that man, this movie is garbage, but I do think Tony Scott made it something else. No. I think Tony Scott elevated it because he brings this commercial sensibility to it, as well as, and this was by design, even beyond Tony Scott. When I say commercial sensibility, I mean like sort of the just, oh, does that look super cool? Kind of like the way that everything is like that orange, you can see it influencing people like Michael Bay. But also
this feels like a Michael Bay movie, even though it's pre-Michael Bay. Yeah.
Well, Michael Bay eventually did a movie with Jerry Bruckheimer, who produced this, along with Don Simpson. And Don Simpson, look into that guy. That guy is made of cocaine. When he died in like the 90s, at the time, according to the authorities, died with the most substances in his body.
Nice.
I think like 20 something. Just like a cartoon of 80s producer excess, like I think pulled guns on writers, DUIs all over the place that the studio had to cover up, but made like these amazing movies.
Yeah.
And just is one of those, like there's an interview with him on Charlie Rose with Jerry Bruckheimer. And it's fascinating to watch. But anyway.
Wait, so Tony Scott, before you go on, we get to talk about it, but Tony Scott, I know of this, and I think he did Days of Thunder. What's his other
name? He did Days of Thunder.
We would know his name from.
True Romance? The Hunger?
Oh, True Romance. Okay. I didn't mean to make you look it up. It sounded like you knew this guy super well.
Yeah. I mean, Revenge is a great one. His later output before he died was iffy. I know he did Domino. Crimson Tide is a great one as well.
That was one of the last. The vampire one?
Yeah, with Susan Sarandon David Bowie.
Yeah.
And it's been commented about famously. There's a scene in this. No one's seen the movie Sleep With Me, but a lot of people have seen the Quentin Tarantino part of it where he is this side character at a party, gives a whole speech about how gay Top Gun is. You can look that up online.
I've even seen that.
And I got in trouble once with two different people for bringing that up. Big fans of the movie that did not like hearing that. But it was by design. They wanted to bring some of the aesthetic of like the gay nightlife to movies. And they did that with this, sure. But then like it's gay as hell. And that's fine. You know.
This movie has a gay male gaze, male gaze, just spelled with a Y. It's, mm-hmm. It is evident, but it's shocking to me that it's, mid-late 80s and Meathead showed up this, like the most cishet, gross, like unironic people that's ever existed, went out and joined the Navy after watching. There's something, I don't know, like if meta had existed back then, or at least we knew what it was, I think I'd probably make some kind of weird meta thing about this. But no, I think it's just went, I don't know. They'll probably give us money. Let's see.
They certainly worked with the military, and they had to pay them a bunch of money to let them use the ships and the planes. There's a story allegedly that at the beginning, when he's getting all the, all the planes are taken off and whatever, that the sun was going down. And Tony Scott wanted like just, I need a little bit more time to film, but we need to like turn the ship around so we can get the sun kind of in the same place or whatever. He just needed to turn the ship around. And the captain was like, I will turn the ship around. It's going to cost like $25,000 to turn the ship around, basically. And Tony Scott was like, fine, I'll write you a check for $25,000. And so the captain turned the ship around and the check bounced.
Nice.
And that's movie making. It's just really hustling and lying and hoping it all works out.
So the Navy probably had like an editorial, say on this, at least in some way. I'm just really surprised that they didn't go like, this is totes gay. We can't have our name attached to this. And I'm like, keep in mind, that's not for me. Very pro-gay, double thumbs up, like the whole spectrum, rainbows, yay. But it was the 80s, and they're a militia branch, or whatever the fuck you call it. Like, it's kind of shocking that they watched this and went, yes, this is the thing that we want selling the Navy on.
Yeah, I mean, some of it is just that, like, hey, it's just dudes being dudes. You know, like, I think so. Like, the gay panic aspect of it wasn't really thought of, I think, because it was more just like guys hanging out and being guys. Because the changes the Navy wanted in the ship was just stuff like the opening dogfight being moved, and like they didn't want a Maverick to date an enlisted officer. It's now a civilian contractor. That was some of their changes anyway.
Yeah, the one I read was the guy that had the panic attack early on, Cougar.
Oh, Cougar.
That he was going to crash into the jet carrier? What do you call those things?
The aircraft carrier, he was just going to crash in the ocean.
But they said, like, oh, no, this is, no, there's too many jets crashing, and we want young men to do that in real life. We don't want to spoil it. We want real life Americans to burn to death in jet fuel.
And this is actually something that I'm curious about looking into, because I will admit, you know, I don't know that much about military history, but it doesn't seem like we do a lot of, like, air dog fighting. It seems like we mainly just bomb places.
John, what I can tell you is that on March 3rd, 1969, the United States Navy established an elite school for the top 1% of its pilots. Its purpose was to teach the lost art of aerial combat and to ensure that the handful of men who graduated were the best fighter pilots in the world. They succeeded. Today, the Navy calls it Fighter Weapons School. They call it, can you guess?
Good Fly Man School.
No, Hotshots Part Deux.
Oh, weirdly. I would rather watch that. I
think maybe
that.
Somebody edited this Wikipedia thing. So they had a throwaway line in the movie to explain that, though, where Michael Ironsides and Tom Skerritt.
Yeah, there's a little history about, like,
yeah,
how this, like, went down to Vietnam, but came up.
Yeah, we used to be, like, good at shooting people down, and now we're not as good, so we want to learn to be good again. But also, you know, because we both grew up in the 80s, and this is about where I start to remember the world, you know. About, you know, mid-80s, where my brain starts turning on, at least enough to have forgotten what happened to me and then start remembering the pleasant things like Top Gun. But I seem to remember, like, most of the movies were just like, boo, Russia, boo, Russia, the movie. That, yeah. I think they were just like, look how cool our planes are.
Yeah. Well, boo, whoever the enemy X is, because it's never really clear. I think in the script they're supposed to be North Korea, but.
Well, the end one, because the first guy that they didn't actually fire on was Russian. Because he had the, like,
was
the,
he?
Didn't they?
Because he had a star and a circle on the back of his plane.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, because it doesn't really matter who we're fighting. Because this movie isn't patriotic in the sense of go USA. It's patriotic in the sense of the military is awesome fighting. Yeah. And it's like with the, you know, like I said, I don't understand if we do much jet fighting like that, because it seems very romanticized. It seems very Snoopy versus the Red Baron, or that this could be settled by two individuals in the air doing this rather than, like, blowing up their water supply. And if that could happen, that was warfare, it was more like robot jocks, where two guys and steel things fought each other, and then that would decide the fate of the world. I'm for that. Let's do that. But,
well, if the movie Stealth taught me anything, is I'm just glad they don't have a sentient AI inside of those planes.
That's true. The new one was supposed to be initially about drones, but then they went, wait, that probably sucks. Let's not do that.
Tom Cruise with, like, an AR helmet, like, using a PlayStation 2
just
controller.
Like, yeah, sitting on a couch.
Playing Angry Goose and crying.
But, so here's a question for you.
Please, I'm sure I have an answer.
What does Goose do in the plane?
Glad you asked. I looked this up. He's an RIO.
Rio.
Yeah. So he's obviously a macaw.
But what does that mean? What is an RIO?
I have no idea. I've been trying to, I meant to look it up. I'm going to guess a rear information officer is what my guess is.
So, I'll bet.
No. Okay. No. Rethinking. Radar information officer. I think he's the guy that tells you where the, like, the guys to shoot at are.
The bogeys are? Like,
so Tom Cruise is the pew-pew, and he's the over that way.
Okay.
I think that's what it is. But, yeah, he's referenced as Rio, and then I have a note in my file that says, look up Rio, and I didn't think about it until this very moment. So, he's a Rio.
All right.
You know, he probably dances on the sand.
Yeah.
Just like a flowing river through a highway to.
Okay, I got beef with that.
Do you?
So, yeah,
because
I only found this out recently. Danger Zone. Oh, guess what? It's Kenny Loggins. Oh, isn't Kenny Loggins so great for Danger Zone? That is a Giorgio Moroder song that a whole bunch of people were supposed to sing and didn't, and then they went to Kenny Loggins. So it's So why does Giorgio Moroder not get the credit? Why is it Kenny Loggins?
Well, I'll give you two reasons. One, Kenny Loggins rules, and he did a great version of it. Two, I have no idea who that other person you're referencing is.
Oh, you need some taste. Giorgio Moroder is like one of the synth guys. Did the theme to Flashdance, made songs for all kinds of performers. Soundtrack to Scarface, that's Giorgio Moroder.
The synth guys, like, so he drinks alcohol on the set of the Enterprise.
Oh, yes. He did, but that's unrelated to his ability with the synth.
Yeah.
Big synthesizers guy, Sparks would be nothing without him.
Did he have a rad-ass beard?
You're thinking of Vangelis, I think.
No, what I'm thinking of is Kenny fucking Loggins. And you asked why Kenny Loggins got popular, because it was the 80s and he had a big-ass rad beard.
That was it.
That was sexy back then.
Yeah.
It was the genitalist Tom Cruise reptile man. He was the height of sexy in Kenny Loggins.
I'm just saying, like, hey, Kenny Loggins did a great job. But when we talk about the Phantom of the Opera, and we do a lot, we don't say, man, that's a great Michael Crawford song. No, we say Andrew Lloyd Webber, right? So how come Andrew Lloyd Webber gets the credit for that, but Giorgio Moroder doesn't get the credit for Danger Zone?
I'm just going to say charisma.
It's an unfair world.
Because Andrew Lloyd Webber just oozes charisma.
That's true. That cannot be denied, but I don't sell Giorgio Moroder short.
Who did Playing with the Boys? Was that also
That I'm going to say is just Kenny Loggins.
Because that song is...
It's beautiful.
It's amazing, but it's extra amazing when it's just oiled up hunkosaurus is playing volleyball.
Yeah, and Tony Scott has kind of said, yeah, I don't really know what I was going for with that scene.
But. There's another thing I read at the trivia where fucking Tony Scott spent the entire day of shoots on that volleyball scene to the point that, like, Sony or whoever the fuck put this out, we're calling them. Like, you can't do that. Like, you can't spend all this money. The trivia, it's like, and of course, turns out to be like one of the best scenes of the film.
What's interesting is, yeah, so this is, like I said, Tony Scott is coming at this from a commercial background, and this is definitely like a sea change for American cinema in that regard as well. Like, you can watch this movie and be like, what's the advertisement? Like, what is it trying to sell me? And I think movies particularly are so much like that. There's so many movies now that I'm like, this looks like a fucking phone commercial. So on one hand, go to hell, Tony Scott, but he did make this look really neat.
Predicted the future.
One thing I like, and you can always tell in a good Tony Scott movie, that everyone's sweaty. Everyone is so moist in this movie, and it's beautiful.
This is the sweatiest movie maybe I've ever seen, and definitely we've discussed on the show. Everybody is drenched.
It's great. I love it. They're actual, like, human beings doing things. It's sweaty as hell.
But they're like, ugh. But okay, wait. So on the volleyball scene, just the follow-up. Fucking Maverick on the reasons I hate him. He waits that long because he's playing volleyball with the boys.
Uh-huh.
And he wants to have a date with Kelly McGillis. Mm-hmm. To the point that he gets there without showering first.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's his in, because then he's like, oh, I just take a shower. And once they see me with a towel on. Yeah, he's gross.
I have a note in the file that, like, when he was picking up Kelly McGillis, I said, this dude has read that book about negging. And that's exactly it. Like, oh, dude, I'm stinky, you know?
Well, and that's like he introduced. I mean, you're introduced to him and his womanly, womanizing ways. At the bar, makes a bet with Goose about who's going to, whether or not he can score with her at the place.
Yeah.
Which is like, hey, why don't you go have sex in a bathroom? This is what men do. And that's gross. And that's a scene that I always loved, that, like, how beloved that scene is the You've Lost That Love and Feeling, where he gets to try to woo her. He gets all his buddies to start singing that song a cappella to her. Then it doesn't work. He crashes and burns. I mean, eventually she kind of falls, but he crashes. But everyone loved that scene. I was at a wedding once. This is the first wedding I ever went to of, like, people my own age. And the couple at the reception had little cards at each place setting that said in rhyme, we're going to, if you want to make a toast to the bride and groom, you have to sing it. And it has to include the word love. So all the groomsmen got up and sang You've Lost That Love and Feeling, which is a fucking weird thing to sing at a wedding. But no, it's from Top Gun and everyone loved it.
So that scene made me flash to how uncharismatic people must have watched this movie and tried to be charismatic by singing that, doing the exact same thing. Like the unfunny people saying, that's nice. Like,
But yeah, I was a regular at karaoke bars when Adam Sandler songs were big. So, yeah.
So you understand the pain, but moving to that point, and I think I need to bring this up because I've heaped a lot of hate on Mr. Tom Cruise for this movie, and rightfully so. But I would just like to also say that Revenge of the Nerds guy, who's Goose?
Anthony Edwards.
Anthony Edwards is maybe the least funny man I've ever seen attempt to be comedic in a film. It is horrific. And I just want to quote from the IMDb trivia is that they had a skeletal script and they had to find the humor on the set. Dude, you did not find the humor on the set. What you did was I don't like this movie. Have you picked up on that? Like if I
yeah.
if I
didn't,
okay.
Yeah.
Just want to make sure I'm being clear here.
But the meatheads loved it. But like I definitely like I have known so many of that kind of guy. So he certainly successfully played an archetype. But yeah, Goose
let's stop
too.
There for a second. Do you think is Anthony Edwards on set trying to be funny, or is he self-aware that he's playing a meathead that's not funny, and is he playing unfunny guy trying to be funny?
I think he was playing funny for the time. I don't think it was that removed of a performance. But it could be. I mean, it could be. But it isn't to say that. Like, I don't want to make it sound like. I guess the way that you phrase it, I hear it more as like this sort of derisive thing, where I think like he's playing this character, he's just doing what that character would think was funny.
No, that's what I mean. No.
Yeah.
He's doing like I guess a better way to put it is he's doing a good job at acting as Goose.
That's how I'm taking
and
it.
And the person that said we found the humor on set didn't understand. That Anthony Edwards was doing a character that isn't supposed to be funny.
I don't know. I don't know that he isn't supposed to be funny. I think he's doing the jokes that guy would do. But Goose like Cougar. So, you know, I referenced that this being less of a rah, rah, rah America and look at how the Navy makes heroes. Look at Goose and Cougar. When Cougar leaves at the beginning, thus allowing Maverick and Goose to get into Top Gun, he leaves because he starts thinking about his son. And he's like, well, I don't want to leave him an orphan. And then Goose has a family. And look where they ended up. Whereas the people who stuck to the military.
I thought Cougar left because he had a panic attack and couldn't get in the plane again.
That's why he had a panic attack. He was thinking about his kid and how, I don't want him to be an orphan. Yeah,
no, that makes sense.
So it's also Tom Cruise fighting between this sort of rugged individualism and being the best versus like, oh, but I have like human things over here that are distracting me. And how can I find that balance?
Yeah,
that's really the because there's not that's the enemy of the movie, because there's no threat. Like even when they get called up to fight whoever at the end, it doesn't matter what that is. And they're all just fighting. In every other scene, they're fighting to get a name on a plaque.
Also, let's just discuss Maverick for a second here. The name is, yeah, you're in the military industrial complex. Like one of the main things they try to do is strip you as much identity as possible and mm-hmm. make you as like the person next to you. Yeah, I'm a Maverick. Dude, fuck your face.
But we need people that will break the rules because they know what's right. And that's what heroes do.
Yeah, because that's fucking, yeah. Dude, fuck America. And it's just what a piece of shit country that like this is the thing. We're not going to have another episode where shit on America, but this is one to one why America blows.
It's a very like individualistic thing. Yeah, it's the military will raise you up and help you be a hero and not hollow you out inside and make you a psychopath.
Yeah.
And so it's this romanticized thing that probably got people to be like, oh, I can go join the military, not look at how neat the planes are.
Yeah. We should probably talk about how the principal from Back to the Future is in this movie. And
yes,
very sweaty.
Yes, very, very sweaty. Love that. Love that actor. His James Tolkien is his name. Not spelled the same. T-O-L-K-A-N.
Hey, he only wrote the Silmarillion.
Yeah, he's in Masters of the Universe as a cop.
Oh, of course he is. Yes.
Yeah.
What of the better roles ever? That in Dworko when he eats fried chicken.
Just a good 80s face. Angry guy. But yeah, again, like everyone else, so sweaty.
But Lisa, so this movie starts off being very sweaty in the Indian Ocean. Which mm-hmm. I feel like makes sense because like India's hot as fuck. But then they'll like go to Top Gun school, which I'm presuming isn't in the Indian Ocean, and they're still just hot as fuck.
Yeah, they say it's like Miramar or something like that, which I don't know where that is, but some of it was shot in San Diego, I know, which is like generally pretty temperate. I've been there, it's weird, it's like an outdoor mall. The weather's just nice. And then in fact I've been to that bar where they play the piano.
Oh,
and
really?
Yeah, it's sucks, but that whole trip was I spent time in like, and it's called like the Gas Lamp District, which is sort of like in Portland. We have, I think they just call it the Entertainment District. But think of like downtown where all the like the dance clubs are. So like that, it was that. I think I saw like 7 bachelorette parties out and about when I was down there. Yeah. So it's not my favorite place.
No, I mean, it sounds fucking terrible. I mean, it sounds a perfect place to have a Top Gun tourist spot.
Yeah. And it's all like the piano still there. And like, I think they have some Top Gun paraphernalia around. And the bar was fine. That place is, of all the places we went, that was one of my preferred, because it was,
yeah, the bar looks,
it seemed like a regular ass. Yeah. It seemed like it was a regular place that you could go to, not a weird club.
Yeah. So, because their friend has a panic attack, they get to go to the top flight school. They get to go be Top Guns, which I feel bad for, Cougars Rio. Apparently he was like the number one Rio and then doesn't get to go to Top Gun school.
Yeah. That's Tim Robbins. As Merlin.
Oh, did he get to go? Because he's in Top Gun school later.
No, he's at the end. He's not in the Top Gun
school. Oh, that's right. That's why he's there. Okay, yeah. Now I get it. Okay.
No, but I agree. Yeah, they don't really talk about like, well, can Merlin still go? Because he's, like, it should be Maverick gets moved up, Goose gets left behind. But
yeah, I didn't notice that was Tim Robbins till the end when he's on the aircraft carrier. I'm like, oh my God, Tim Robbins. But I guess he was in the movie earlier. I just, didn't pick up on
not
it.
Yeah, not a giant role.
Yeah, but also, you know, I don't know how you can possibly film Tim Robbins and Tom Cruise in any interaction, because I mean, that's like nearly a foot between them.
Yeah, Tim Robbins is 6'5".
Yeah, and Tom Cruise is listed as 5'7", which is probably 5'4". Yeah.
He's a Canadian 5'7".
Yeah, they use the metric height. No, that would just be meters. Who cares? Highway to the Danger Zone, at this point in the movie, after when they get sent to Top Gun, plays for the second time. I was just pointing it out because I did take notes every now and again. And I think counting orchestral versions, I think it's 4.
I mean, it's a bop.
Yeah, it's either 4 or 5 Highway to the Danger Zones in this. It is a bop, but you got a whole movie to fill. Oh, that's the other thing. Let's talk about this movie. The movie goes at about 100 miles an hour. Like, just the scenes happen and happen and happen. And at some point, I realized that nothing has any emotional weight because all you do is just get to the next plot point and nothing sits. How long do you think this movie lasted in world? Like from they're flying around in the Indian Ocean to they're flying around in the Indian Ocean. Like the whole they go back to Top Gun school, they come back, Goose dies, blah blah blah. Cause it could be anywhere between 4 days and 6 months. I cannot
But I think that's part of the appeal of this movie too, is because it is like you said, everything's going 100 miles an hour. And you're just kind of getting these, apparently for this time, like super flashy scenes. And then it's kind of fleeing you from one thing to the next. And the way Tony Scott does it has this very kind of like almost dreamlike feel to it, this sort of heightened romantic reality. And so because like it all happened so fast, you're like, yeah, I'll go to flight school and then I'll be fighting MiGs in like a week. It's fine. Yeah. I'll join the Navy.
Yvonne Nettenyage.
Yes, exactly.
So we get introduced to the Top Gun school with Tom Cruise riding around on a motorcycle in very atmospheric and dramatic lighting, watching planes land and take off. And that made me laugh because you're a pilot. Why are you watching jet planes? Like, that's your job, dude.
Yeah, because jets are cool.
Not when you, like, but you fly them. Like, you.
Yeah.
So you're just going to stop on the side of the road and be like, yeah, look.
Well, I think it's also just a way for them to go like, man, look at how cool these planes are. Even the people that fly them just like to watch them. Yes. You should fly them.
Well, I think a lot of this movie is also, they took a lot of, not stock footage, but they took a lot of coverage and they used every fucking second of coverage they possibly could.
Like they were only allowed to show like a couple of missiles firing. And so they shot it from every different angle so they could just reuse that footage again and again and again.
Yeah. Yeah, he rides his motorcycle to there, and we get introduced to, like, the best things in this movie. Michael fucking Ironsides.
Yes.
And Tom motherfucking Skerritt. There's very few things about this movie I enjoyed. And I can tell you, both of them, every second they were on screen was like a breath of fresh air. It's just like, let's have a prequel. We digitally de-age Skerritt and have him be a pilot, because my boy.
What? It also just makes me so happy because, as you very well know, having when we saw him at the Hollywood Theater, how that Michael Ironside's kind of a lefty. And the fact that he keeps playing these like hard-nosed military guys.
Totally, yeah.
It just adds this extra level of funny, this extra level to it if you see it, or if you know that.
Yeah, he's so good in this. It's also weird to see him young. Great. Here's a dual thing. Yes. He looks super young, but Tom Skerritt looks so old because he was in Alien 7 years before that.
Yeah, I think about that, yeah.
And he looks about 25 years older than he did in Alien.
He picked an age and rode that for a long time.
Oh, he's one of those guys.
Well, yeah, because he looks like that. I think at least until like the mid 90s, if not beyond.
Oh yeah, you're right. Yeah, I guess Alien was like the tail end of him looking somewhat young, and then he just jumped 20 years, and let's ride this shit out. There is a section here where they first get to the Top Gun place, where they're being mocked in class because apparently Val Kilmer knows about Tom Cruise and he's. I don't know. I don't. There's the point.
Yeah, it's
the point is he makes some kind of comment at them, and Goose does this sarcastic laugh like that's the way he just won the argument. And I just don't even understand the personality that they're trying to put on this man. I don't mean to keep belaboring the point. It's baffling what they think is funny or charismatic, or maybe not.
It's that I'm not mad. I'm laughing actually. It's just that. It's just that like I'm playing into this because I'm so not affected. So I'm just going to throw it right back in your face and be sarcastic. And even
is not an alpha move, though. These are supposed to be alphas.
That's why it's so alpha, because you don't expect it. Because what's he going to do? Just attack him? No, man. Goose plays the long alpha game, including dying before anyone else. That's the ultimate alpha move, because then they can't get you.
Oh, yeah. So I have a note here. We've already talked about how gross he is at mm-hmm. the bar, when Tom Cruise is at the bar. But I made the quote that when he gets there, he refers to it as a target rich environment. Yeah. And then they show the hot 80s.
Yeah. Girls. I mean, it's the 80s. Like look at any sort of like teen sex comedy thing going on there.
No,
but it's just,
I know,
it's
man.
A bummer.
It's just,
yeah.
But we're watching it in 2022. It's just, I didn't think it was going to be, some paragon of like, modern sense of like social justice. Yeah. Like this is fucking gross. The fact that he follows her into the women's room and then leans over.
Yeah, because she brushes him off, and he said, "Well, that didn't work." So I'll follow her into the bathroom. You know, like most romantics do.
So the next day he goes to class at Top Gun School, and here's the big twist that goes fucking nowhere. Turns out that lady he was trying to bang for $20 last night is the civilian consultant at Top Gun School. Oh boy, this is gonna get complicated. Except they never do anything with that, except between the two of them going, I guess this is gonna get complicated.
Well, that brings the roadblock to their relationship, because when she's coming down on him for the bullshit that he pulls, she has to do that professionally, because she also doesn't want to know, like, that's the line she's towing for her job, but she's falling for him, and that's the fight. And it lasts 5 seconds when he gets mad when he revs his engine. It doesn't, like, their chemistry is non-existent, and I don't care about what happens to
them. It's really... and because I'm Alex and I'm on the show and I declined to not bring up teeth, I will bring up this. Were unibrows on men acceptable in the 80s? Because Tom Cruise has one hell mm-hmm. of a unibrow.
Yeah. I think artisanally crafted unibrows. Not like Mo Sizzlak.
It's distracting. Yeah. I don't like it. It makes him unfuckable for me. Because everything else he had be winning
take
over.
Take it down the road. You've got a unibrow.
Yeah. One of the first kind of dogfight scenes.
Which, by the way, before we get out of the bar entirely... Val Kilmer wearing his sunglasses, mirrored sunglasses indoors at a bar at night. Man, he's cool. Mm. What a cool guy.
Here's the thing about Val Kilmer in this movie. One, he is a snack.
Mm-hmm.
I find him very attractive in this. But I like that he is just good at his job in the way you're supposed to be. He's not a maverick. There's no backstory. He just, like, when he at one point, the worst thing that happens to him is he waits a little bit long to shoot down another enemy because he wants to make sure he does it right. Like he's like literally the example of what you would actually want in the Navy, but he comes off as like, this arrogant asshole because
yeah,
of it or
whatever. And I think that's a little light, but we can talk about that when that scene happens.
There's a runner in here, and I don't want to have to go through this whole fucking movie, but Maverick wants to do something, and then Goose is in the back going, please don't do that. You're like, you can kill me. Please don't. And Tom Cruise doesn't listen. So So he buzzes the tower and he gets him in trouble with the same thing. And it's just, it's infuriating as somebody with like an anxiety problem that like somebody that's supposed to be my fucking friend, my brother, is just going to sit there going, no, this, I'm going to totally just do a backflip in this plane and then buzz the tower and get you. No, but it's funny. Oh man, no, afterwards I realized I was wrong. Yeah. You didn't realize you're wrong when the person that you're supposed to trust and love is screaming at you, please stop. Oh God, please stop.
Well, buzzing the tower is just stupid. Like, I don't like, he just does it to be an asshole. It's not anything where it's like, he's a dick. It's like, oh, the pattern's full. So that means there's tons of planes around. Well, fuck you. I'll just buzz the tower.
The lead character in this movie is a jerk off. And I'm using 1980s terms.
For that.
What other 1980s terms are there? He's a douchebag.
Ideally, I think the idea is supposed to be that he is, and he does this internal growth after, you know, things happen. But then at the end, like, he's still buzzing the tower. So he's got that still that fun edge to him. But he's never, people tell him he's reckless all the time. But I think the movie is still like, Maverick's pretty cool, you guys. Like, regardless of what he does.
Oh, speaking of bad comedy, which I was a while ago. How fucking stupid is that coffee guy when he buzzes the tower? It's like, oh, I'm spilling coffee on myself. Oh, I wish I didn't say it like that, but I did. It's on record.
Maybe go back and remember vaudeville a bit. And the real mechanics of comedy.
Maybe not do it three times.
Oh, it's great. Well, and it's not just that he does that, but then when he storms out of the office going, I want some butts. That's good. That's good stuff.
Here's another unfunny thing that happens where Slider makes some comment at Tom Cruise, rightfully, because Tom Cruise is a piece of shit. Tom Cruise leans over him, takes a and goes, Slider, you stink. Yeah. Wow. Got him. What a fucking witty retort you just came up with, Mr. Maverick. I really, really dislike
that. Well, and the fact is that the movie plays it off like, because he got him, because then Slider's like, oh, smells his armpits. Like, who gives a shit, man?
Hey, John, here's what you don't get is they found the humor.
That's true. That's true.
So that's just some of the wacky things that happened. Yeah. Next, you're going to find out who the prankster was of everybody.
What a fun group of guys.
So the next thing I have, all of this is just, I'm trying to like skip the like nitpicky stuff because I hate everything in this movie. The next thing I have is he goes to, Kelly LeBrock. He goes to Charlie's house. He gives the speech about sitting on the dock of the bay and how his mom used to do that right before she died. And there's this camera move that is focused on Tom Cruise giving the speech, and it's supposed to have gravity, and there is fucking nothing there. There is nothing to this. He is not putting any, because again, he's a fucking reptile.
I mean, the guy can act. I just don't think this was a good thing.
He can't act subtle, actual human emotions. He can do Rob Dignigian.
I don't know. I think he carries Eyes Wide Shut pretty well. And that doesn't always require the Rob Dignagian. I think this movie, for what it's trying to do, I don't think he rose to the challenge. That's also much later in his career, too. So.
No, I'll give you that. That is because I was thinking of his other performances and they're mostly not subtle. But, you know, actually, Eyes Wide Shut, he does put in some.
But he's not in those roles very much. He's now just jumping out of things now.
But he's terrible in this and he has no gravity and it's awful. But here's another highlight that I forgot. Fucking Meg Ryan is in this movie. And she is. I've already objectified the man. I may objectify one woman. It is the contract I signed. A fucking snack in this. And she shows actual like emotions and pathos and it makes it worse because anytime she's near Tom Cruise, it's like a giant spotlight of how badly he's doing, which he's got this natural, beautiful energy.
Well, and even through that awful accent that she's doing, it's still fun to watch. Like, I'm still having a good time. Yeah. Cause you're like, oh my gosh, you're human being. Look at that. Not just the different stacks of testosterone.
So there's a scene where she's like leaning out. Tom Cruise has his arm around her and Goose is playing the piano while Charlie, what's her name? McGillis?
Yeah, Charlie.
McGillis is sitting on the other couch. And I could actually see the chemistry between the two female leads. Even though they're not interacting with each other, while Tom Cruise, the guy that got the millions of dollars, has his arm around one of them and he's not there. Because it's like two interesting actors being near each other, and it was like Sucker. It was Oasis of the Desert. I have this note that probably won't make the final edit, and I'm going to quote it here. Tom Cruise in a sex scene feels weird. It's like bestiality, or at least fucking a gray alien. Where it just feels wrong. Well,
it's funny, yeah. It's like, because Berlin's Take Your Breath Away, also a Giorgio Moroder, that was like huge. And that was, again, that's all Tony Scott. That's all like blue background, silhouettes. It has nothing to do with them. Like any eroticism in that scene is totally brought to that scene. And actually that was shot after the fact, including that alongside with her, their interaction in the elevator where her hair's all tucked up under her hat.
Yeah, she's in an inexplicable outfit.
Yeah, because her hair was colored differently for the movie she was in, and his hair is a little bit longer because he was shooting Color of Money. But so those both of those things were they like added in later to try to boost up the romance there. And it's like it is an iconic love scene, but again, that's all Tony Scott. That's nothing to do with them.
I feel the need for speed happens around here, and a Viper goes up, Tom's character. And there's another Tom Cruise goes against Goose's wishes thing. And this is where I make my first note, and I counted it here three different times in my notes. I have some variation of this movie so fucking boring because it's just more fucking flying and I don't care. And then I said, this must be what it feels like when John watches a Marvel movie.
To some extent, yeah. I mean, I will say, I mean, in the sense that I'm bummed out when people are talking, yeah. Because I think part of the thing is he does make the aerial combat seem interesting. I still don't fully have a grasp of what's going on because air combat is hard to get a handle on, like, perspective and where you are because you're 360, you know? It's not just like you can look at the horizon and figure out where people are. It's just blue sky and blue sky. I do think it does like a good enough job of piecing things together so you can tell what's going on and keeps that kind of exciting.
It's fine. It's just I don't care about the combatants that it's like, yes, it looks it's almost like a George Lucas thing where it's like those special effects are very nice looking. I don't give a fuck about what's happening right now. So speaking of which, they kill Goose because he gets sucked into someone's jet wash.
They're doing a flight exercise. Iceman gets behind the target, which I believe is Viper, or is it? It's Jester, whatever. It's one of the two main guys. Maverick is like, take the shot. He's behind Iceman. He's like, take the shot. Iceman's like, I'm too close. I'm switching the guns. I can't get lined up right. And they're like, if you can't take the shot immediately, you have to leave. You have to go. That's the rules of this combat. And then Bale comes from like, fine. And then bails out. Tom Cruise speeds up to go get him, goes through Val Kilmer's jet wash, which fucks up his engines because he's not getting the clear air intake. Fucks up his engines, and so he goes into this spin, which is the same kind of spin that the guy that died on this movie went into.
Yeah.
And then they try to eject, but Goose hits the jettison canopy and then cracks his head open and dies.
Well, so this is confusing because you're right. The action is pretty clear for what we're dealing with, but that was pretty muddy, like the sequence of that. They land in the ocean and Tom Cruise drives them boat and it's bad. But when the rescue helicopter picks them up, there's this really bad bit of ADR. It's like, sir, you have to let him go. Sir, you have to let him go, sir. But because this movie moves at a billion miles an hour, you don't see him take his pulse. He's literally saying you have to let your dead friend go so we could like get you back on the plane. But they haven't established he's dead. I mean, obviously they've established he's dead for us, but not for the people on the, it's just such muddy filmmaking, but you're like, yeah, fuck it. Next scene. Let's go. But the thing is the next scene, he's talking to Tom Skerritt and Tom Skerritt echoes the words, you have to let him go. Like that ADR hassle in the ocean meant something.
So who do you think is more responsible for Goose's death? Maverick or Iceman?
I think probably Gander, Whither Will I Wander?
Or is that a poem or some nonsense?
Hey, Goosey, Goosey, Gander, Whither Will I Wander? It's like a nursery rhyme or something. You know, weirdly, I think it actually, I agree with the commission there that it was just kind of a act of God, sort of like it just shit happens. You're like doing real dangerous ass stuff. Because that's one of those scenes where Tom Cruise actually didn't do anything wrong. He wasn't being all Maverick, which he should have been. It should have been clear that it's his fault. Because that's how his character would have grown, but it wasn't clear.
I think that's the thing, is that he still feels that it's his fault, regardless of what they tell him. Like, that's why he wants to quit.
Yeah.
But I do think it is. Someone wrote an article a while ago about how it was, I think it was on Screen Rant or something, about how it's actually Iceman's fault. And they had, I said Iceman, Iceman's fault. But because he took too long, he didn't take the shot. He was supposed to leave if he couldn't get the shot immediately. And that's fair enough.
Yeah.
But that's like, who's at fault in a rear-ending accident? Like, usually the person in the back Tom Cruise was way too close and then sped right up through it.
Yeah.
You know, like that's on him. He knew, you know, in theory, he knows how jets work. So I think Tom Cruise is right to feel bad about it. I think he killed Goose. And even though, yeah, I think at the same time, yeah, perhaps they're right. We're like, yeah, it's sort of no one's really at fault in terms of your engine's completely shutting down. You know, you tried and, you know, Goose ultimately, you know, he could be in trouble for crashing the plane, but Goose is the one that ejected into the cockpit or into the you yeah. know, whatever. But I still think Tom Cruise is right to feel bad about it.
He ejected into the canopy.
Yes.
I'm referencing Venom 2, which is available on our Patreon.
I'd already forgotten about that, but yes.
Yes, it happened. Yeah, I think everybody's at fault for being
in the- Sure, fair enough. The military-industrial complex.
Yeah. He talks to Meg Ryan, and there's this going with the kind of gay thematics of this. Is her going, God, he loved flying with you, Maverick. There is some layering happening there. And again, it's Meg Ryan because you want to read more because she's a good actress. And you end up reading this, like, just further kind of that Tarantino speech, gay subtext, the film there.
Like, everyone around him is forgiving him, except him, which is kind of bullshit, because I'd be pissed at him if I were her. But I guess if they found that, you know, no one's really at fault, what, you know, who knows how much she knows, being a civilian, but that doesn't matter to him. And I like that she hugs him. This is a woman that lost her husband. And he can't be bothered to put the box down to hug her. He's just like, he lets her hug him. And he's just standing there with the box of his stuff. Maverick's an asshole.
Yeah, this movie's stupid. Maverick's kind of shook. He's not good at flying anymore. Well, the other kind of major plot point is he goes to Tom Skerritt's house. Tom Skerritt gives the lowdown on what actually happened with his dad. And what actually happened with his dad was very heroic after being somewhat of a Maverick himself.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yeah.
Good job, movie. That's some good writing right there.
I'm glad that one guy that knows what's going down is the head of Top Gun and didn't bother to share that information with anybody else, like his family. That's fine.
Yeah. So it turns out there's an actual situation happening in the Indian Ocean.
Yeah, because Maverick has given up being Top Gun. He just lets Iceman become Top Gun.
Yeah. And but they're like, hey, let's go, you know, kick some nondescript, probably communist or maybe socialist ass. And they go there and Maverick has to figure out again how to be that Top Gun. And here's how he does it. He's flying down a trench in his flying machine and he hears the voice and he's saying, Ben, what should I do, Ben? And he says, use the force, Luke. Oh, no, sorry. He goes, Goose, what should I do, Goose? And he holds Goose's dog tags that inexplicably he didn't give to his wife or child. you asshole. You fucking asshole. That could be a good memory. And then he goes, oh, I've got the power of the force, of the goose. Now I'm going to go back there and kick some in somewhere over there. People's bad people. MIG. They're MIGs. Kick some MIG ass.
Mm-hmm.
It is. It's. I mean, dude, Star Wars came out really recently. In 86, you can't be pulling that shit.
Yeah, but that's also telling about this movie being patriotic versus just like join the military. Is it so? He successfully saves Iceman from this MIG that's on his ass. I did it again. I said Iceman.
I was gonna say what the fuck.
I don't know because I just want to say it that way. I guess.
Is it because you like the X-Men so
much? That's what it is. Yeah. So he comes back and saves Iceman and then you get the classic, you can be my wingman. No, you can be mine, which means who's going to fuck who, whatever. But, oh my God, look at that. You, this international incident, you're on the front page of all the papers, but the other side is saying it didn't happen. Again, they don't mention the country. They just say the other side saying that the incident never even occurred. And what does he want to do? Well, he wants to be an instructor at Top Gun. It has nothing to do with what's right, fighting for freedom, patriotism, anything to do with America. Yeah. It's like, no, I want to be the best at doing what I want to do, was fly these planes and help other people also be awesome at flying planes. Doesn't matter what they do with them. It's just, you got to be good at flying planes. And so it's joining the Navy, not to because you believe in the American project. It's just like flying planes is cool and they'll let you do that.
Viva Netanyahu. Yeah, it is. I have like nothing left to say. How do you feel about this end scene? It feels like in a modern time, this would be a post-credit scene where he's at that same bar and somebody puts on, you've lost that loving feeling. Yeah. And it turns out, oh no, it's Kelly McGillis. Yeah. She's back.
He can't have it all. He can have an excellent career in the military and the girl. Unlike those other guys who fucked it up, he can make it work.
Oh, you know, there's another bit of filmmaking we didn't talk about here that's confusing to me. That really struck this scene. Tom Cruise is at his lowest. Mm-hmm. He just fell out of things. He quits Top Gun school. Everything's terrible. So he goes to a bar and drinks some iced water. Mm-hmm. And then when everything's fine, he goes to a bar and drinks beer.
Why? Is it confirmed that it's ice water?
Do people not understand how narrative structure works?
I mean, he's too sad he can't even drink.
That's not a thing.
Because he's not playing by your rules.
Bullshit.
He's a maverick.
No, he's played by my rules.
Don't invite him to game night.
No, dude, fuck that. He's played by my rules. I fucking hook him up to my Thetan meter and fucking give him some whiskey. Here, got some real shit. I bet you Tom Cruise doesn't drink.
Or maybe has a white wine spritz or something. But yeah, no, he can have it all. And I mean, really, this movie is you can replace fighter pilot with like ski school or being the best football player. Like it does it. It being military is ancillary to this movie. I mean, like it's
being a citizen on patrol.
Yeah, it's the structure of this movie and the core of this movie is just about a guy trying to be the best at a thing. It could be anything. But in this case, it happens to be a billion-dollar fighter pilot.
So, like, real quick, I'm just going to wrap up my thoughts on this movie. This is terrible. It looks pretty at times, but there's long swaths of people talking to each other that have no charisma. Top Gun's bad. And normally, like, I got a lot of my time in my hands that I would say, like, oh, I would just watch Top Gun Maverick after this. Just because I'd be curious. This movie has not even sparked the slightest hint of interest for me to watch Top Gun Maverick. I do not give a fuck about that movie.
Apparently, I am curious only in that I've heard all over the place that just the aerial fight scenes are amazing. They're very well done. And so I'm curious to see that, but I'm not rushing out to theater to see it. I still enjoy this movie as a fun like 80s curio kind of thing, and it's hard to say, like a lot of my boredom came from that I've seen this a billion times, you know. No, but I just have seen it a billion times. Like it's just growing up in the 80s and seeing it and being over people's houses and watching it. I can't say that, like, well, the movie just isn't any good, because it's just that I've seen it a lot.
This is probably my, not to interrupt you, but like I'm going to say this is like maybe my third time seeing this. Like this is not a well-trod movie for me.
I'm probably in double digits with this now. I mean, when we got a Laserdisc player, this was the first movie my dad got just to test out the sound system with that opening jets taking off thing. And I don't think he watched.
Well, hell yeah. And Highway to the Demon.
Yeah. I don't think he watched past that, but I'd watch it a few times. And then, like I said, watch it at other places. So, but I still think, yeah, as far as dumb action movies go, you could do worse.
Oh, whatever. I made my points clear. John.
Yes.
Let's recommend some things that we've been into lately. I am going to recommend, what do I like right now? I've been watching two things. I'm rewatching Star Trek Deep Space Nine, because I do that every few years just because it's my favorite Star Trek. But I also started watching One Piece, which you were telling me you've read the manga. I am enjoying One Piece so far. It is, if you've ever seen an anime, you know this already. Mm-hmm. It's done. Like it's, you've already got like every part of it. Like he like in episode 7, he could change his name to Goku and start learning how to be a Super Saiyan, and it would be the same fucking plot. But it's really enjoyable. The kid that played the problem with, I'm watching it in dubbed, and Luffy, the lead character, his voice is the same guy that plays Naruto in the Naruto things, and it fucks me up a little bit. But yeah, recommend it. It's fun. It's on Netflix. There's like a million seasons, so if you want some noise on in the background while you're doing other things, thumbs up.
I went on a bender, bought a bunch of 4K Blu-rays because I have a thing that can actually play that now, and didn't watch any of them, but instead watched the Arrow Blu-ray of Southland Tales, which I finally picked up. And you can go back and listen to our episode of Southland Tales, and I bet this might be the one movie that I've done a complete 180 on, because I was very much like, it's, you know, it's got some things, but I don't like it. I love this movie. It's a fucking mess. And probably I still have the same criticisms of it, but I love it. And I watched like the Cannes cut, which I don't like as much as the theatrical cut. Maybe, I'm still not sure. I don't even know with this movie, but it's weird and it's a great distillation of that post 9/11 era. Yeah. I don't think if I had seen it when it first came out, I wouldn't have appreciated. I think as you get further away from it, it works. But I still think as a filmmaker, I don't know if that guy is any good at all. But this one happened to, because I don't really like Donnie Darko, but Southland Tales does it for me. So watch that.
Well, I'm glad to hear you doing a 180. I'm looking forward to our rewatch of insert funny movie here.
Fifth Element, not happening. still hate it. Someone brought that up all recently, right, talking about the, because they're like banning jewels and stuff like that. And to, like, Joe Biden wants to get nicotine out of cigarettes, and people were talking about the filters in Fifth Element.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And how that is a joke in the Fifth Element that I do enjoy.
This movie we're watching.
So I'm thinking for next time, I was very taken with Val Kilmer, and I still have not watched that documentary about him, but I would like to celebrate Val Kilmer by looking back at one of his finest roles, that in The Island of Dr. Moreau.
Mm-hmm. The fraught version of Island of Dr. Moreau from the 90s, starring David Thewlis, who played Remus Lupin in the Harry Potter movies. By the way, one of the characters in this, in Top Gun, was based on the real-life person, Peter Pettigrew, who is a Harry Potter character, which, weird coincidence.
That's unfortunate.
It is.
But
anyway, Harry Potter, Harry Potter, Harry Potter, Harry Potter, Harry Potter.
Yeah, you got Val Kilmer, Marlon Brando, Fairuza Balk.
Just David Thewlis.
David Thewlis, fine. No, he's great. He was the glue that held together Wonder Woman.
What's his name is in it?
Ron Perlman.
Ron Perlman is in it, playing like a beast man.
Oh, weird. That's how he got big, playing the Beast, Beauty and the Beast.
Different beast. But I won't give you any, hints, but I'm going to say this beforehand. I've watched this movie a whole bunch.
Oh, nice. I have not. I've only seen the documentary about it.
Yes. So we're watching Island of Dr. Moreau. Remember, we have a Patreon.
We do.
That you should go to. Do you know our Patreon address?
Patreon.com/AlexBolin, Alex with two X's.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, because I didn't change it for my old one. Yeah. So patreon.com/AlexBolin, Alex with two X's. It's all Jaws stuff. We have a whole bunch of bonus episodes available going back like many years at this point. So you'd get your money's worth. And I'm going to put it frankly, those numbers are dropping and we're putting effort into this. So you can fucking pay us.
Yeah. And there's more stuff coming up. We're in fact, got a new one dropping soon about a particularly,
I mean, let's tell them.
Yeah.
We're doing Doctor Strange 2, The Island of Dr. Moreau Madness.
What it's Doctor Strange 2, the two universes that are basically pretty much the same of madness, I think is what it's called.
No, it's Doctor Strange and the two universes that are kind of weird, but in the middle they turned into paint. And it was like a whole bunch of cool like effects and like an After Effects reel.
Yeah. Remember when I said something about it looking like a phone commercial? Movies look like a phone commercial in the earlier part of this episode. Anyway, go ahead and check out our Patreon to get more information about that.
Hell yeah. All right. Bye.
Goodbye.